Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Welcome to Syosset Library's Turn the Page podcast. My name is Jessica. I will be hosting you today, and I'm really excited to be hosting this author, the author of True Crime Redux. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about this very interesting book?
Okay. Well, my name is Stephanie Kane, and I've published 7 mystery genre fiction books and 1 true crime memoir, which is what this is. And the origin of the story is it's a murder that occurred in June 1973 of a housewife in the Denver area named Betty Fry. And the reason I'm writing about it is because it's a very personal story, because Betty was murdered shortly before I was to marry her son. We were sophomores in college. And the day of the murder is something that always stuck with me because, first of all, it was right before our wedding. There was some disapproval of the wedding, especially on Betty's side. She called us that morning. It was a Saturday morning. I spoke to her very briefly. So that was the first odd thing that happened that day. The whole day was very strange. And it was odd because she'd never called us before. We didn't know if she was coming to the wedding. It was just a complete surprise. Then a couple of hours later, I saw her husband, my soon-to-be father-in-law. He had come to, we were living in Boulder, going to the University of Colorado, and he had unexpectedly driven to Boulder, just showed up completely unannounced at the karate studio where my fiance was teaching. So that was the second weird thing. And even weirder was his whole demeanor, the way he was dressed, and the fact that he had a big bruise on his forehead. So the day just got stranger and stranger. We went to pick up my fiance's first suit, his wedding suit. And when we got home, we got a phone call saying, "Come home, your mother's been killed." And immediately they thought that she had surprised a burglar, which would have been kind of strange since it was a, you know, bright summer day, you know, everybody's out watering their lawn and stuff. You know, how does somebody just get killed by a burglar in a neat little subdivision in a setting like that? But attention quickly turned to Dwayne, and he was indicted and arrested for first degree murder. So that's kind of how I was involved in it. And right before the trial, they dropped the charges, but we never knew why. And we got married and we just went on with our life. And nobody talked about it. You know, we tried to pretend that nothing had ever happened because we were focused on making a life together. We were married for about 9 years, and then we got divorced. And I never forgot that day because something told me that somehow the wedding was the trigger for what happened. And I should say it was a very brutal crime. Betty was beaten to death in her garage on that bright, you know, Saturday morning. So it was an extraordinarily violent, rage-filled kind of crime. So anyway, I went on with my life. I became a lawyer. I, you know, practiced law. Then I remarried. And my new and current and very wonderful husband asked me, you know, why did they drop the charges? And I couldn't answer because I had no idea, because we never talked about it. So I researched it the only way I knew how, which was to go to the courthouse in the county where the crime occurred and get the file. And it was a surprisingly skinny file. So from there, I just, you know, to exercise my own demons, I started to write about it. And I knew nothing about writing. I'd never taken a writing class. I'd never written fiction. And that book it ended up being published by Bantam in 2001. It was called Quiet Time. And it was a mystery. It was genre fiction. It was totally fictionalized. I wrote it under my second husband's name. That became my pen name. I changed it in a million ways so that it would never be identified to that family. But lo and behold, I was interviewed on a local book station about it when it came out. And a few years later, Dwayne's sister, who was then in her late 70s, happened to see a rerun of that. And in kind of a crisis of conscience, she came forward and said, "You know what? My brother actually confessed to this crime." And that then a cold case was opened. I got swept up in that. I was a prosecution witness. And, you know, that took another 9 or 10 years. And when that was all over, I finally got all of the files from 1973 and the cold case. And I went out and I interviewed every witness I could track down and went through thousands of pages of documents and audio tapes and all that stuff. And from that, that ultimately became True Crime Redux. So that's the story behind the story.
Yeah. And first of all, I mean, so the book A Quiet Time that was published, did that come out the week of 9/11 or the?
It came out. Yeah, yeah, the week. Yes.
Oh, talk about bad luck.
It had a very short life.
Yes.
It disappeared almost as soon as it came out, which is why when I got contacted 4 years later by a police detective, I was just completely shocked. You know, because first of all, because it was fiction, and I didn't think anybody cared, you know, because they had dropped it decades earlier, you know, so I thought it was over, but it wasn't.
That's in and of itself, just that whole chain of events is almost like too much, almost like a web of karma, you know, like who would have thought that you, of all people, someone in the family would be watching a rerun of that, of you talking about that book and being like, yeah, it's time to let everybody know that he confessed. But what I thought was really interesting about this book in particular was just sort of the structure, how you kind of went about it. It was almost like you yourself were writing a guide to true crime. You know, you used quotes. You use different sections where you talk about the character types. You have one called Show, Don't Tell. I mean, it's just such a really interesting, almost like, for lack of a better phrase, a murder board of putting together not just a true crime story, but also piecing together like a crime. So, I mean, you said that you studied law, right?
Yes.
And you've written murder mysteries. I have to ask, you know, was Betty's murder almost the catalyst for both, wanting to do both?
No. Well, I wish I could say. I really wish I could sit here and honestly tell you that I became a lawyer because I wanted to avenge Betty. No, it wasn't anything like that. What happened is that Doug, her son, who I was married to at the time, we had a karate studio and he decided he wanted to go to medical school. I didn't want to run the karate school myself. And having been terrified of math and science and all that in college, law was the obvious thing. So he went to medical school. I went to law school. That's how I became a lawyer. Nothing sexier or deeper than that. I practiced a lot of different kinds of law. I don't regret a minute that I did it, but I think it also, you know, to digress for a second, I think it helped me become a writer because it really honed my analytical abilities. Law school, you just get beat up a lot. And that turns out to be very good preparation for the publishing industry because you just get kicked in the teeth a lot. So anyway, that's how that happened. But as far as mysteries go, I grew up with Alfred Hitchcock Mystery Hour, Twilight Zone, One Step Beyond, all that stuff. I loved that stuff as a kid, but I never imagined that I would become a writer. And the whole reason I wrote Quiet, what became Quiet Time, is because I wanted to get the whole experience that I had had with that family. And what I sort of instinctively felt was being involved in the trigger for the murder. I just wanted to get that. I was tired of carrying it around in my head. And I wanted to get it out of me. And the only way I could do it really was to turn it into a mystery. I mean, it was a mystery to me. At that time, I wasn't sure that Duane had killed Betty. You know, I didn't have evidence of it. I didn't even know what the police had had at the time. So it was a mystery, and it was also a mystery that I needed personally to come out right. I needed to write it in such a way that the killer was caught and justice was done. I needed that for my own purposes. And that's how I wrote Quiet Time.
Yeah, I think that also, I mean, you know, and like, I wanted to ask about the name of the book, True Crime Redux, but there is such a interest in true crime in general. And I agree. Yeah, I, you know, what I was going to say before with just the fact that, you know, somebody, his sister caught you on a station rerun, that's almost Hitchcockian. Like, I'm thinking of like that scene from Psycho where she's skipping out on work, she says she's sick, and then she sees, like, I think it's her boss or something, they lock eyes, she's in the car trying to skip town. You know, it's just, it's very like Duane being like, oh, look at me, I got away with this crime, and then decades later it's like, actually you didn't. I mean, it's just kind of amazing. But, you know, true crime in general, and I think the reason why people like true crime and the reason why they like mysteries is because it does kind of give almost like a some sort of illusion of power. You know, you're overseeing this case, you're not involved, but you feel like you're empowered to put the pieces together and bring the killer to justice, even if you don't.
Well, there's a tremendous satisfaction in that. I mean, we said, I certainly don't want to get into politics, but, you know, we see it everywhere. You know, there's this need for truth to come out, for people to be held accountable, for some kind of resolution to happen. And when that doesn't happen in real life, the people who are involved are become crippled in some way. And I think I was crippled. I know I was crippled by the whole experience until I started taking charge of it for my own purposes, you know? Because you just can't, it's like you have a big hole in your life. You don't know, was I responsible? You know, could I have done something differently? You know, did she get, you know, beaten to death because I entered their family and I upset some kind of fragile balance in it? I mean, you're haunted by these things. And until you find the answer, you imagine the worst. And you know, even if it is the worst, because it did turn out that the wedding was a trigger, not the only trigger, but a trigger. I feel like you can always accept reality if you know what reality is. If you don't know, if you're flailing around without any sense of, is this true? Is that true? Am I crazy? Did I really see this? You can't assimilate that. You can't, you know, deal with it and come to peace with it if you don't know the facts.
So, of course. Yeah. So the name of the book, True Crime Redux. So how did, was that always your working title? Did you kind of come up with it last minute?
Actually the publisher suggested it and I immediately liked it. There was a really long evolution between Quiet Time and True Crime Redux. After I got all of the, and this will explain, you know, your question about the short chapters and the organization and stuff like that. This is how that came about. After the case was over and I got all the files and everything, I tried to write it as traditional true crime. And I gave it a traditional true crimey kind of title, cold case something, cold, something like that. And it actually attracted a top New York agent and some publishers, but it never sold. And I think I know the reason why, because I wrote it in third person and it was a sort of a just the facts, ma'am, you know, just a straight linear traditional true crime. And, you know, let's face it, this is not a very sexy true crime. It's the murder of it's a quiet crime. It's the murder of a housewife in a suburb of Denver. You know, it's not a serial killer thing. So it just, writing it in third person in that kind of linear traditional way just took all of what was interesting out of it. And so after that, I just got really frustrated and I thought, you know, I know what's missing. What's missing from this story is my involvement, you know, why I would even want to write it, why it was interesting to me. So I had to do it. I knew I had to do it in first person. So my very first agent had warned me about writing in first person. She said, the first person narrator runs away with the story. Their voice gets really tiresome. So just stick to third person. But to write this story in a gripping way, I had to write it in first person. So with that in mind, I decided to, and having given up on publishing it, frankly, I decided to write it as a blog. And what I liked about the blog structure was it's writing in a very tight box, 500 to 800 words. You know, so I thought, okay, if I'm going to write it in first person, I have to have some disciplining mechanism so that I don't just, you know, blather on and on and on and on. So I adopted that format. And then I thought that to further discipline myself to make every piece count, each piece had to be very focused and each had to kind of stand alone because that's what a blog is. You know, a reader can dip in and out. They don't necessarily read it continuously. So I kicked off each piece with a quote or a definition as a way to frame what was to come and to discipline myself to stick to the point. So I did that for about a year, like once a week. I ran it on my website. And then somebody suggested that I pull them all together in one place and make an ebook. So, and I had given up on, you know, publishing it. So I thought, okay, you know, I'll throw them together in an ebook. And I put that out and that attracted the publisher. So then, and he liked, you know, the format and the short chapters and all that. And then the challenge became, once I actually read them, you know, in order on paper, I realized that a collection of blogs is not a unified narrative. You have to have connective tissue. You have to have things that people expect from a real book that they don't expect from a blog. So part of it was editing out repetition because in a blog, you have to keep reintroducing the characters because somebody may not have read or may not remember what you wrote 3 weeks ago. So there was tons of repetition. I mean, just constantly reintroducing characters, which is so annoying for a reader, you know, who has the whole book in front of them. They don't expect to keep being given reminded of stuff that they just read. So there was that. And then I needed an introduction because, you know, with a blog, it's kind of like, you know, you're throwing the reader in head first and they don't necessarily know what your stake is. But in a book, a reader legitimately expects to know what the narrator's stake is pretty early on. So I added an introduction and that helped. And then as far as the order and the sections go, that's exactly the order that I wrote them in. And I did that without any kind of outline. And I think that the discipline of having learned how to construct stories, just it was kind of a subconscious thing that drove me to tell the story in a certain order that is a dramatic structure. So that's how the structure came about.
It was really well done. So I think like one of the The last things I really want to ask is just sort of like, do you feel that everything sort of came full circle writing this? Do you feel almost like it was sort of putting, I don't want to say a lid on it, but like a bookend almost to between Quiet Time and True Crime Redux?
That is exactly the way I feel. Those two books have bookended my writing career because it's always been about telling this story. You know, that's what drove me to write in the first place and drove me to learn fiction technique and craft in the first place. And being able to now tell it to the best of my ability in the most honest way that I'm capable of telling it, it's very rewarding. And that's not to say it hasn't been painful, because at every step of this process, I constantly had to face myself, you know, to look at myself in the mirror. Like during the, you know, when I was writing Quiet Time, you know, the question I had is, you know, even though I fictionalized it and I'm writing it under a pen name and nobody's ever going to connect it to the real case, do I have a right to write about this? You know, then during the Cole case, I had to face these people I'd fictionalized and caused my former father-in-law to be re-indicted, you know? So like, you know, there was, that it was very painful to, you know, did I have a right to take real people and fictionalize them for my own catharsis? So I had to face what I had done then. And then, you know, again, with writing True Crime Redux, you know, is it my story? Do I have a right? You know, I think it's more not just my story. Any one of those people could write legitimately their story. It's not the only take on it. It's my take on it, you know, but still, you know, as a writer, you have to constantly question your own morality. At least I do. So yes, it was cathartic and it was rewarding. And actually, I can honestly say that I did not fully come to terms with my role in Betty's death until I wrote like the last few chapters of True Crime Redux. You know, and I've always been looking for context. You know, each of those blog pieces, which became chapters, was kind of a different lens on the crime. I mean, I love your analogy to a murder board. I've never thought of that, but that's really perfect because you come at it from all different ways. And it was always to try to find some meaning in it, to try to understand it, to try to look at myself in an objective way and take responsibility for what I did or didn't do. And, you know, all of that context ended up adding up to, okay, I can live with myself. You know, I can look at myself in the mirror and accept myself as a human being.
This has been such a good chat. And I do think that True Crime Redux is just a really good read. You know, I like the structure. I like the short chapters. And I'm happy to hear that in a way it was like, it was also therapy for the author. You know, you do kind of always hope that the author is getting something out of what they're writing, be it just fun or, you know, but emotional, but like, you know, coming at it from somebody who was there, somebody who was part of this family or about to become part of this family when this crime happened, it's nice to sort of get that connection and hear that that connection was made. So thank you so much for chatting with us. Thank you for writing True Crime Redux.
Well, thanks a million for having me and for asking these questions.
Thank you again. Once again, this was Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast. Our guest today was
Stephanie Kane.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.